Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with Kia. Full EV or plug-in hybrid? Go electric with Kia. For more, log on to kia.com.
1850 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. And Joe at RT.ie. Sharon, good afternoon.
Hi, Joe. How are things?
And how are you keeping? Because it was this time last week when things began to go wrong. What happened?
It was around 12:30 this day last week, and I noticed that I had started to bleed. So my doctor had told me that if there was any bleeding whatsoever, to go to the hospital straight away.
Okay.
So I had to wait for my partner to come home from work because I wasn't able to drive. The pain had started as well, so I had to wait for him to come home, and we had to drive the 40 minutes to the hospital. I knew that with the restrictions that partners weren't allowed in for scans, but we both thought that when it was an emergency that he would have been allowed in. But unfortunately, even though I explained to the nurse at the door what was happening, there was no way he was allowed to come in.
You said, I need to go to the maternity unit ASAP. I'm bleeding at the moment, unfortunately. And I presume you were obviously in great distress. It was obvious that you were deeply, deeply upset.
Yeah,
Go ahead. And they said, and you said, was Pat there? Your partners were calling him. Was he there beside you, Sharon?
Yeah, he was. He was at the door with me as they took, you know, my temperature for a COVID to allow us into the hospital. And there was just no way he was coming in. He was allowed to come in.
So he had to stay outside?
He had to stay outside. I went in and checked in at the reception desk, and the girl at reception said to me to go into the waiting room. When I went into the waiting room was full of heavily pregnant women waiting to have their babies, and also women waiting for their scans. There was just absolutely no way I could sit in the room with those women. So I went back to the reception desk and I asked, could I sit there? I explained to them there was no way I could sit in that room. And they said there was no problem, but sitting in reception was nearly just as bad. I could actually see my partner outside the door from where I was sitting. And then as I was sitting there, there was flowers and presents coming in for these new mums and new babies. And there was people leaving through the front door a few feet ahead of me with their new babies, happy. And so I was sitting there bleeding and in pain, and I think it was close to an hour and a half before he was even seen.
And did you think you were losing your baby at that stage?
I had a feeling. I just thought that my doctor had thankfully warned me that 1 in 3 first pregnancies do result in miscarriage. As much as I was almost sure I was miscarrying, I was also hoping that it was just something that happened. But it was just torture having Pat outside the door where I could see him and me sitting there. And because I was still in public, I couldn't take off my mask, and I was crying so much I couldn't even breathe. Whereas I feel like if there had been some sort of room that we could have gone into, it would have been easier. Or even if he could have sat beside me holding my hand, I mightn't have been crying as much, because I was crying for him as much as I was crying for me and the baby.
And how long before you had a scan?
I think it was a while before I had a scan, because the doctor had to go and find out if they actually could give me a scan, because she was saying that some of the machines weren't great. So in total, I was there for 4 hours before the doctor eventually let me go out to get my partner to bring him in to say what exactly was happening.
And what exactly had happened?
She said that she couldn't confirm that I was miscarrying, but she said the possibility was and the probability was that I was miscarrying, and that I'd have to go back again on Sunday to have another checkup to get more blood taken and to see exactly what was happening. But the one thing that I had that made the restrictions worse is they obviously asked me, had I any questions, but I didn't know what to even ask. Yeah. I didn't know what a miscarriage was. Obviously, I knew it meant losing the baby, but I didn't know what happened to the body or anything like that. And I think that if Pat had been beside me, he might have thought to ask questions that I just couldn't. I couldn't even speak. I think if he'd been there for more of it, that, not that it wouldn't have been as bad, but I would have known what to expect.
So you're alone, and you were alone for about 3.5 hours?
3.5 hours, then on Sunday. And then yesterday, I had to go back for the scan to confirm what we already knew. And again, there was no way he was allowed to come in.
By the way, the bleeding is so difficult in itself, but I presume you were in pain, Sharon.
I was in great pain. And when I came home on Sunday evening, I was in great pain as well. And all they could give me was paracetamol. I couldn't take anything else. But then the fact that I had to go back for a third time was due to the fact that the clinic where they scan is only open Monday to Friday, 8 to 1.
So you went back on the Sunday.
Yeah.
And were you given, were you told, listen, because it's so difficult, you can bring someone on Sunday?
No, they weren't letting people in.
So was it the same scenario on Sunday? Pat drove you and he sat outside in the car and...
Yeah.
And did you get any further confirmation or news on the Sunday?
No, they just said again that it looks to be a miscarriage, but that I'd have to come back again and have it confirmed.
For the third time?
For the third time, because the clinic was only open 8 to 1, Monday to Friday. It's like as if they expect women to only be allowed to miscarry during those times.
So you went back in on the Wednesday?
Yeah, I went back in yesterday morning to have it confirmed that, yeah, the baby and the pregnancy was gone.
Oh, I hope no one has to go through. I'm so sorry that you went through this, the miscarriage primarily. And please God, things will happen again.
The main reason we wanted to make the point as well is that I think a lot of people forget that it's also very difficult on the men.
Yeah.
When they have to stay outside, and just for the fact that any other woman that's going through this or any other partners that are going through this in the next few weeks, if they don't change restrictions, not that you can say what they can expect, but just to know that the partner isn't going to be allowed in, and that they just won't let people in. The Thursday would have been the main time that I needed Pat beside me, and there was just no way. I really couldn't believe that they wouldn't allow him in. I mean, all of the restrictions have been revised in the last 6 months, but nothing has been done in the maternity hospitals, and it's just awful. It's just, words can't even describe how bad it is.
Stay with us, Sharon, because you mentioned the man, and we've Peter on the line. Peter O'Flaherty is in Limerick. I should mention, I won't identify, but Sharon's maternity hospital is not in Dublin. Peter, please, your story.
Hello, Joe.
How are you?
Not too bad, no. My wife is expecting tomorrow week, the 17th. She's going in for the section. And she has three previous kids already, and they're all sections. And we lost the baby. She had a miscarriage 3 years ago, and an ectopic. And she was told all the time since the pregnancy, since the COVID, that I won't be allowed in. I'll be allowed in just when she's going into theatre, and when she has the baby, and then that'll be it. And she'll be kept in the hospital for approximately 7 days after a section, and I won't be allowed in till I have to come in and collect her on the 7th day. Trust.
And what have previous pregnancies been like, Peter? Is there a reason to be concerned?
No, there's complications there. She had a section there. Three sections. Well, she has three kids at the moment, like, and one underway, and there were all sections, and we lost one shared three years ago with the topic, and she's just very, very nervous. Like, every time we go for a scan, every time we go to the doctor, she's just thinking the worst. She was in my arms the other night, and she was so worried, like, saying that she's not going to get through. She's so scared to go to win the teeth out again. And it's just, and just to think that she's going to be by herself.
Yeah.
Just wrong, like, just. And it's just time. The time is so close. No, we only have 7 days left, like, to lift these restrictions, like. And just to hear the stories from the other women there the last few days, just heartbreaking. Like, my wife couldn't even listen to the show yesterday. It was just so sad, like. Heart goes out to them, like.
Well, hopefully. I know they're under pressure. The hospital's under pressure from the other end, and the master of the Rotunda, which featured yesterday in a number of stories, said they will not make Professor Shane O'Hagan said, "We will not make knee-jerk reactions in response to public pressure." But
there's lives on the line here. Like, there's mental health. There's lives. Like, there's people. Like, there's babies. There's people. Like, the women are going through so much horror. Like people in pubs and businesses and people of power can put pressure on the government and to say, do this, do that, and yeah, they'll fold over and they'll do it. But yeah, like, I was joking with my wife the other day. I said, I won't be allowed into the maternity, but if you want me, I'll be waiting over in the pub across the road drinking a pint. So when you call me, I'll come over.
With your mates, if needs be.
I know it's
a different setting because
you have to kind of put a bit of light on it. Like,
a lot of people made a point, but also that the hospital is obviously people who are. Now, pregnancy does not mean you are sick. Pregnancy is a medical condition, but it's not an illness. It shouldn't be classed. But the argument is that people who are in hospital could be more prone to infection, and also that they don't want anyone in the hospital staff becoming unwell because that.
That's so understandable, and we're doing everything there. Like all the COVID restrictions, we're abiding by everything. My wife's Nana is still alive. She's in her 80s there, like, and she has medical conditions, and we don't want the COVID coming in there, you know.
Yeah,
and our small son is nearly two. We don't want him getting it, or the baby, or my wife, you know. So we're applying to everything. But what makes me laugh is there's a friend of mine. His partner had a baby the weekend, and he wasn't allowed. He was allowed in for the labour. That was okay.
Yeah.
And then she was coming home on Monday, and he was allowed to go into the hospital, into the maternity hospital, stand outside the ward with a baby seat, and then take his partner and baby home. Well, he was in the hospital, like. So, like, you're either allowed in or you're not allowed in.
There needs to be consistency, yeah.
It's just so unfair, like.
Now, Peter, I don't want anyone worrying unnecessarily, but it's important to hear these stories. But the other thing we are hearing is that the staff are brilliant. Staff are doing their utmost under these. They're just operating the guidelines as set down by the hospital management or whatever.
Well, the staff are all, like, we couldn't fault the staff over the maternity, even when my wife was going to their scans and to everything. Like, they're so good, they're so nice, like, but you don't have that person, you love to put your hand around you, put your arm around you, say it's going to be okay.
Yeah,
she's so nervous, like, and
or know when, as you say in your text, you know when you need. Shane Higgins is the master of the Hollow Street, I think that's what I said, but anyway, and Peter Malone is the master of the Rotunda. I was quoting Shane Higgins from today's Irish Mail. Peter, say that for a second. I know, and your point is what you made in your call is that you know she knows she needs a bottle of water, you'd whip it out of your pocket. She knows if she needs to make a phone call, you'll dial it up for her and get. Anyway.
Touch wood, like, if we do get any bad news or any complications or anything, she's not going to be able to understand, like, a nurse or a doctor telling her something. She needs women, like, when they're even not just women, like, but if you're in a bad predicament there and something's wrong and someone's telling you something serious, you don't take it in.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
You really need someone. It's really difficult.
You know? But my wife also there on Monday emailed Leo Bradcor and Morris Quinlivan. He'd be Shane
TD
in Limerick there.
Yeah.
And Morris Quinlivan, it was Monday. He was very busy and he got back to Monday evening.
Yeah.
But a very long email saying that he knew and they were going to fight for it and all. And so much appreciated that he did get back to us. Like, mm-hmm. So,
but Leo Bradcor, like, is astonishing. He's up to his...
I know that.
But I'm sure through whatever channels they're hearing your stories, Peter. Stay there. Kate is on the line. Kate, good afternoon.
Hi, Joe. First and foremost, can I just say I want to offer my condolences to Sharon, who was on. I can't imagine how difficult it was for her to come on today given how raw everything is for her.
Yeah.
I was in two minds myself about coming on, and my miscarriage was almost 2 months ago, so I just think it's very brave of her. I had a miscarriage in July, and it was an IVF pregnancy. It was my first pregnancy. And like many of the women who've been in touch, I basically went through it all alone while my partner sat in the car outside. We initially booked a scan for when I was 7 weeks in a private clinic that we knew my husband would be able to attend.
Yeah.
And at that scan, we were told that the baby's growth was behind and the heart rate was slow. So I was due in my IVF clinic the following week for the scan that they would do before they would discharge you. They call it the viability scan.
Mm-hmm.
And I called them the next morning and explained what we had been told, and they brought me in that afternoon and they confirmed the same thing, that the heart rate was slow and it was likely that the baby wouldn't survive. And they were going to bring me back a week later. So that was the first time that I was attending alone. I went into that, I guess, a little bit hopeful that we might be okay. I had to wait a week to be rescanned by them, and I went back, and I was told that, again, alone, my next scan at the baby's heart had stopped. I hadn't started to miscarry yet at that point, but they would refer me to the early pregnancy assessment unit, and they would take it from there. So the next morning, I was to be in the early pregnancy assessment unit first thing. And again, this scan was alone. I was in there, I think it was past 7 in the morning. It was very early. There was no one else in the clinic. The clinic was apart in a separate building to the hospital. And there was a separate outside entrance in that people could have entered the hospital and gone to the early pregnancy assessment, you know, without actually going into the hospital itself. But still, partners weren't allowed. So at that scan, I was told that the heart had stopped. The baby had stopped growing a week previously. And then midwife was very nice, very empathetic. Like all of the women have said, the staff are really fantastic and they are dealing with very difficult situations for women. But at the same time, like, these rooms are big and there are measures that can be put in place where social distancing can be applied in these situations, and especially, I think, for women who are attending the early pregnancy units, because those women aren't going there with a normal pregnancy situation. Yeah. Most of the time they're going because they have either had previous miscarriages or they're having suspected miscarriages, or something is not going right with their pregnancy.
And was there anyone else in the EPAU?
No, there was no one there while I was in there. There was a receptionist, there was the nurse, and the doctor actually hadn't even arrived when I was in. I had to wait a half an hour after my scan with the nurse to see the doctor, and I was waiting on my own. My husband was in the car outside. I didn't know whether I should ring him or text him to tell him that our baby's heart had stopped, or what was coming next, what the doctors were going to do, if there was going to be a procedure. I'd never been pregnant before. I didn't know what to expect from any of it. So that was probably the worst half an hour, I think, of my life, waiting see the doctor to know what was going to happen. I ended up having to wait a week before they would intervene with my miscarriage. I did actually miscarry about 5 days later, naturally. And when I was miscarrying, I actually ended up going to the emergency room because the bleeding was so heavy and I was so concerned. And again, that was alone. And I had another follow-up scan in the early pregnancy assessment unit after my miscarriage, and that was alone. So in total, I had 5 appointments alone throughout my miscarriage. And I really, like Sharon said earlier, like, for men, and especially men who are going through IVF with their wives, you're so far removed from the process already with a pregnancy. And even with a normal pregnancy, it's the same.
Yeah.
But you're so far removed from the process that you're not processing. I can imagine that men aren't processing what's happening. And for them not to be able to process the miscarriage as well, or not to be there and be able to support their partners through these situations, is just heartbreaking.
And as you say, you from what you can see, the infrastructure and the layout of the matter in the separate building would facilitate some flexibility in terms of separate entrance.
In my scenario, I mean, the hospital I was in, there's an outside entrance in that you could get into the early pregnancy assessment unit in without having to go through the hospital at all. The rooms are big. The scan room was big enough that my husband could have stood in a corner and the nurse was on the other side of the room. You know, I mean, there's space to change in these rooms. When I had the private scan, in the private clinic, they had Perspex screens up between the scanners and the partners. So there's ways and means around it that would facilitate a safe environment, especially, I think, in the early pregnancy unit.
Yeah. And Kate, how did you break the news to your husband?
I had to tell him in the car when I came out from my scan.
Sitting in Parnell Square or whatever you were, you got parked and he was lucky enough to get parked. Stay with us, Kate. I'm so sorry to hear that. Siobhan Curran. Siobhan, what's your story?
Hi, Joe. Hi. I wasn't going to go on the show today because I'm very sick. So just in advance, excuse me if I start coughing and spluttering here. But listening to your previous callers made me ring in and also, I suppose, to express my absolute dismay to hear the master of a maternity hospital come out with that statement today. I, like your previous caller, had a miscarriage about a month and a half ago. Right. And pretty much word for word had the same experience as she did. I had three previous miscarriages in the last year and a half, so they looked after me from the beginning, as in at 6 weeks I went for my first scan. And they scanned me every week thereafter. But all of those appointments, I was nervous. I, you know, couldn't eat beforehand, was suffering from, you know, real anxiety going in. And I went into all of those alone. But thankfully, things seemed, for the most part, to be going along okay until the last one. And in the same scenario as your previous caller, I was in the early pregnancy unit on my own and was, you know, going in there with positive thoughts as much as I could, saying, you know, this is going to be okay. And then I got the news and I sat in the corridor and sobbed for an hour and a half before I was free to go and leave the building. But my husband had waited at home because he wasn't allowed in. There was no reason for him to come and we had two other children. So I said, look, you stay at home with the kids, you know. And I went on in by myself. And it really brought home to me the horrific situation that women today are going through, not just women who miscarry, but also, as your previous caller, whose wife is due in a week or two. I mean, the fact that he's not allowed to go in and support his wife, it's actually inhumane. And I really feel like, what do women have to do in this country to have their voice heard? For the master of a maternity hospital to come out and say that today, it's just disgusting.
Well, I'm just going on the quote from, is that what you're referring to, the quote from the Daily Mail, where he said they will not make knee-jerk decisions in reaction to public pressure? Now,
this isn't public pressure. This is women voicing their reality and their lived reality of the last few months. Especially,
but he's operating, or the hospital's operating under COVID guidelines.
Sure, and I fully support, you know, the restrictions that we have to take. I fully support staff in these hospitals. I work in the health services myself. I have no issue with that. But if you consider the scenario that myself and my husband and my kids can go to a restaurant today, four of us, and have a nice meal and sit there and enjoy an hour and a half or whatever it is and come home, but yet my husband can't come with me and socially distance like I was with all the other women in the hospital, and the other staff, I wore a mask, I had my hands done, all of those precautions. There is plenty of room, especially in the other parts of the hospital, like the early pregnancy units. There is no reason why a partner cannot accompany a woman, especially into the likes of the early pregnancy unit, when, as your previous caller said, they're going in with the expectation of possibly having some pretty horrific news.
Okay, well, just to be fair, and you can react to this as well. This is the quote as reported by Ian Begley in today's Irish Mail. He says, the Professor Shane Higgins said, "I am happy to respond to any parliamentarian or anybody else, but we won't be forced into making knee-jerk decisions because we are being put under pressure." And your point is that it's not politicians or whatever, it's the women themselves and the men themselves who are telling these stories.
Exactly. And I mean, we've been here before. I mean, we all remember the week-long conversation that took place on your show before COVID.
18 months ago, yeah. It was 3 weeks long. 3 weeks long.
3 weeks long even. I mean, there were so many times I was going to ring myself about my own experiences. I mean, I have relatives who nearly died on the operating table in their sections. I mean, I had a baby. My first baby almost died and she battled for a month. And the beautiful staff in a maternity hospital and in Temple Street saved her life. And I'll be eternally grateful. But my trauma remains dealt with, and I think that's another. There's two things about this. If I could get them across, Joe, I'd be really happy.
Take your time.
One is the difference between a healthy pregnancy, going to term, delivery of a baby, and that's one experience. Although it might be traumatic, it is an experience in a hospital. There's the other experience, which I have had and others have had, i.e., where your pregnancy doesn't go to term and the trauma of that, but also, I have an experience where I had a baby and was put in the postnatal ward and left there for days while that baby was dying almost in the neonatal ward. And I was left there with succession of mammy and babies coming back, you know, happy, ringing home, telling them about their lovely baby, listening to their lovely baby beside them. And I was the one in the corner with the curtains around me sobbing for 5 days, you know, unable to move because I'd had an emergency section. Like, there's the treatment of all of these various experiences are in the same, they're treated in the same model, if you know what I mean.
Yeah,
they're in the same ward, they're in the same, you know, vicinity. And I think that needs to be looked at. And I understand resources, I understand all that, but I think to not even have a discussion about it is doing us a disservice. And then the other thing, I just think as well, the general trauma that women go through in having babies is not recognised. I mean, yes, I'm so lucky to have two beautiful daughters at home, and that's what kept me through my four miscarriages, to be honest. It kept me going. But to not acknowledge that childbirth is a trauma in itself, whether you deliver safely or not, it's a trauma on the body. It can be a trauma on your mental health. And I think that's just not factored in to our maternity services. And I wish the masters of the maternity hospitals would please listen to that and not talk about pressure. You know, if people need to ring all their politicians, yes, go and do it. Maybe they'll listen then. But seriously, we're trying to tell a story here and we deserve to be listened to.
Yeah, very much. And Siobhan, just that time when you were told that you were there was a scan, is that correct? And there was a screen, obviously. And how were you told that the baby had been lost?
So I've had four different experiences, I suppose.
Okay.
And at the last one, I was alone for it. The others, my husband was with me, thankfully.
Okay, and the last one
was during COVID. I went in with the early pregnancy unit. I'd already had, I was nearly 10 weeks, and it was probably my fourth scan, if you like, the sixth, eighth, seventh, eighth, ninth week. It was my fifth scan. And up to that point, I knew it was a little bit smaller than they'd like. And, you know, are you sure your dates are correct? And that it just sounded like the others. But it was still, there was a heartbeat in the previous scan. And I thought, no, this is going to be okay. We're going to manage here. This is going to be it. But she turned the screen away from me. So I knew straight away. And she took a while. And I knew myself. And she just said, "I'm so sorry. I just can't see a heartbeat there." And I said, "Yeah, I know, it's okay." And I just started to sob and I started to hyperventilate in the room. And then I went out into the corridor and I couldn't help myself. I tried to sob into a tissue as quiet as I could, but it was full on sobbing. You know, a woman came over and offered me a tissue. But there was about five other women waiting to be seen. And I'm sure their distress at watching me being distressed was horrific. But I didn't take my hand up from my... I didn't take my head up from my hands for half an hour. I just put my head in my hand. I couldn't look up, you know.
God. And how long did you sit in the corridor before you were able to...
So, like your previous caller, I had to wait on the doctor to come back. Then I saw the doctor. Then I had to wait on the midwife to come back from her break. So that was another half an hour. So I think I was about 2 hours in there. And my distress was just left kind of unattended, if you know what I mean. And I'll never forget the text that I sent my husband and my family. And I'm actually really sorry for it now, because my text was very abrupt and very direct. Mm. Because I was in the stress and I didn't have anyone to hug me or to say, you know, we'll get through this. Mm-hmm. But, and I just text them and I just, I don't want to upset your other listeners, but, you know, I just said, it's gone, just like all the rest of them, you know, that's it. And I didn't speak to them for a day or two because I just couldn't.
And Siobhan, I'm also understanding from what you say. I'm presuming from what you said, because you were told no one would be. Did you drive yourself in and back? You mentioned.
Yeah. I drove myself for all the appointments, except the D&C, which I had to get my six-year-old out of bed at 5 o'clock in the morning for my husband to drive me in. But like that, I had taken the tablets before, and the pain that I was in the car, trying to hide it from my six-year-old in the back. You know, I had to go in at 6:30 in the morning, and I could barely walk to the door of the hospital. And we were lucky enough to get parking just outside the hospital, but I needed his help to walk to the door. And I mean, the pain of it is actually horrific. And I think people that haven't gone through it, they don't realise it's like the worst labour pain. Yeah. But you have nothing at the end of it, you know. I drove myself to all of the appointments and tedious two miscarriages because they were in the middle of the night, and like that I couldn't take the kids, so I drove myself at 3 o'clock in the morning to a hospital on the last one, having gone to the local, you know, 24-hour doctor, and said look, you have to go to the emergency room. But I had to drive myself up at 3 o'clock in the morning to get a scan to be told yes, it's gone, and to drive back home crying, you know, 30 miles, you know, 40 miles, whatever it is. If my partner was allowed to come with me, you'd make arrangements, you'd get the kids minded or whatever. But yeah, it's just COVID restrictions are there for a reason.
Yeah.
But if we're allowed to have meals, if they're opening pubs, if my kids have gone back to school, if there's, you know, all of these other stuff allowed to happen, then the least that they should be allowing is a partner to accompany a woman during a time that is
critical times.
You know, critical time, and may have a lasting traumatic impact on their lives.
Siobhan, I'm so glad you shared that, Siobhan, but two, the way you've spoken and the story that you've told is just shocking, and as are many of the stories, but you're telling it for a reason, and that is
exactly
your point, is the pressure for any changes, but by the way, shouldn't be on your shoulders, the pressures, and Kate as well, there was the pressure should not be dismissed because it's coming from politicians or indeed from radio programs or whatever. These are real people telling real stories about their real lives and their real either death or miscarriage.
And I do understand there was a maternity survey, I think, in the last 2 years. And I think that's fantastic and that's great to see. And I'd encourage that. But, I mean, we should all almost be asked our experience, because it's not just a cohort in a, you know, particular few months. I think there's a real message here that's an important public health message and a well-being message for mothers, babies and their partners, that we deserve to be listened to, and we deserve for healthcare policies to be catered to all circumstances, not just the one, i.e., you know, from start to finish of a pregnancy. There's very different experiences, and one hat does not fit all, and I think that really does need to be listened to.
Okay, and thank you so much, Siobhan. A kind regards to you and your two children, and indeed your husband, and thanks for sharing
that,
and also to Kate as well. Kate had a story about the EPAU unit on her own and being told that awful news. Okay, stay with us, because there's more people who want to tell their stories of real experiences during COVID after this. 1857 15815.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
And Joe at RT.ie. Vinnie May. Vinnie, good afternoon. People know you primarily as a drummer in Go The Line, but we know you got married. Is this your first child, Vinnie?
Yeah, it is, Joe. Yeah, it's our first child. We're having a little boy, thank God.
Congratulations. And what's your partner's name?
Karina.
Okay. And how are you doing?
Karina's been doing great. She's a mental health nurse. She works for St. Michael's House. She's been working away. She only just finished up there on her maternity leave about 2 weeks ago. It's been a kind of strange time. My heart, kind of like me not being able to go in for any of the scans, that's bad. But my heart goes out to Siobhan and Kate and all the other mothers like that have gone through a traumatic story like your previous callers. For me, it's basically just it's kind of frustration. In the fact that I haven't been able to accompany Karina to any kind of scans, midwife's appointments, doctor's appointments, basically during the whole thing, and it's completely understandable at the very start of the whole kind of lockdown and stuff, you know. But we're 2 weeks away now from our due date, and the focus on getting pubs back open and all this, it just kind of seems like people's priorities, well, not people's, but the government's priorities in terms of guidelines and NPHET's guidelines seems to be completely askew. You know, like your previous caller said, childbirth is a special occasion, and to not have the support of a partner there is it's just kind of crazy. Like we have to sit out in the car, like, you know, and just kind of wait on a text message or a phone call. You know, yeah. I think it's crazy.
But one of the arguments for the pub world reopening, restaurants and pubs with food have reopened, is that it's and what you do in Codeline, I know you're mega successful, but what you do in Codeline is you're entertaining people and people need that. I know you're not advocating that Codeline go back and perform it, but you'd be too big for Temple Bar anyway. But you're not advocating that. But you see that argument, Vinny?
My issue is not with the publicans themselves. I know everybody kind of needs to turn a shilling and stuff like that, and that's absolutely fine. But they're not the last industry to be going back. Like, you know, the entertainment industry is the last industry be going back. We're still left with nothing. But my point is that if we're allowed to go and sit in a restaurant and eat with six people or go to a bar and have food and drink and stuff like that, and kids are going back to school, like, the fact that I'm not allowed to go in to see a scan of our baby, you know, and I haven't been able to at all. And then when Karina goes into labour, that I'm not going to be allowed to go into the labour ward until the baby is nearly due, is just kind of crazy. Like, you know, it's not just the last kind of hour or whatever, it's the hours leading up to it, like, you know, and the fact that, like, we're just being told, no, that's it, you can't be involved, you can't be there for support or whatever, an encouraging word or anything.
The fact
that, like, this is our first child, and I know I'm not the only person, like, that's going through this, but I think it's just a bit of a disgrace that, like, we're focusing on getting... Okay.
You're still there on the line, Vinny. You're getting the pubs reopened. Vinny, I know your baby is due in 2 weeks. Isn't that correct? You and Karina's baby. The line's gone. We got it back in a sec. Emer, good afternoon.
Hi, how are you?
What happened in it was back in March and in the middle of the start of the lockdown.
The very beginning. We were about a week into lockdown.
Okay, but lockdown was on.
Yes. Yeah. So I was due my first scan for my first pregnancy on the Friday, and I ended up with a sore throat. So I phoned the GP. He advised me to self-isolate and go for a test, so I had to cancel the scan.
Right.
So funnily enough, on the Friday when I was due to have the scan, I started bleeding. So South Dock had suggested I go to the maternity hospital. So I did, and when I arrived there, of course, I had to say I was awaiting a test, and there was pandemonium. Obviously, they didn't know what to do because it was so, the restrictions were so new.
Yeah.
So I was put into a room as quickly as they could, and they obviously had to go and gown up and stuff. So there was a lot of confusion when I arrived, obviously, because I shouldn't have been there. So they brought me, they were very nice, I have to say, as a lot of your callers are saying.
Yeah.
They brought me up to the top floor, which had been emptied out. So they brought me down to a room at the bottom of the corridor, and they did a scan, and they just weren't seeing what they should have been seeing. So, you know, obviously we all had masks on. They were head to toe in PPE. It was, and my husband was sitting in the car park. So, like they held my hand. They were so kind. The midwife actually phoned me twice over the weekend because I think for them it was probably their first time delivering that news in those circumstances. Yeah. So, yeah. So, and listening to the callers, is it Sharon? Like, she's only just experienced it. People are very brave to be speaking about it, but it's just great that people are highlighting it because, you know, it's about partners as well. I think partners are so removed from the process and, you know, for them, you know, there's miscarriages and there's people giving birth on their own. And, you know, it's the government really, I think, need to just take a look at it when they're opening up other things. You know, for me, I'm very lucky. I'm 8 weeks pregnant again, and I've just had a scan. But going to that again on my own was
scary,
you know. So I think it's great that you're highlighting it.
Well, it's the women that are highlighting and the men that are highlighting it.
Yeah, and as I said, it's
and you went with okay, fantastically, you got pregnant again, and you obviously have to go in for a scan. But everything is in the back of your mind about the previous.
Yes.
And it's just, it's just a demonstration also of how long this pandemic and lockdown has been going on. So you go back in, but the regulations are still the same. So you were there on your own during the 7 week scan and up the walls, I presume.
Yeah, I couldn't look at the screen really. And when I got the news that everything looked okay, you know, going out to the car, like. To tell my husband, he was just, you know, delighted, obviously. But, you know, it's very worrying for them too. And I think they're thinking about the woman all the time. And I think, you know, they're quite removed from it too. And, you know, it's their feelings as well, you know, because they can't be there to see anything or, you know, it's just, I think it's hard on everyone. And, you know, all the callers who've spoken before me are the same, you know, even people who are about to give birth. That must be very worrying for people, you know.
And I can hear it in your voice. Your empathy for Sharon and Kate and the other women have gone through this. So, Eimear, hopefully everything continues to go well.
Thank you.
Hopefully, your message, and it's the same message from everybody, will be heard.
Yeah.
Thanks, Eimear, and go safely. And Vinnie May is back. Vinnie, when the baby is due when?
The baby is due in 2 weeks on Thursday. So yeah, it's like
2 weeks. And that's again, 2 weeks like from today, Vinny. I know you're.
Yeah,
I know you're getting excited. I can't imagine what you're going to be like on the day.
Oh yeah, I know. Yeah, it's
in a good way.
Yeah, it's exciting. I'm kind of nervous and anxious about the whole thing because, you think your first. Child being born, like, you know, that I'll be there, I'll be able to hold my wife's hand, help her through everything, like, you know, and I know the midwives and stuff like that in the rotunda have been amazing to my wife and stuff like that with the scans that she and the way that they're working things, because obviously, you know, partners are allowed to come in and stuff like that, like, my fault is not with them at all. They're doing an absolutely incredible job and tireless and you can't thank them enough, like, and they aren't thanked enough, like, you know. But it's just these kind of guidelines where, like, we're living together, we don't really see a huge amount of people. We kind of keep our social interactions to a minimum as much as possible. We're like wearing masks, no problem wearing masks, face shields, everything, like, you know. But it's not thought out that like a wife support system, or like or the mother, expecting mother support system, just isn't allowed to be there, and there doesn't seem to be any thought, and like, oh yeah, it's fine, you can come in for the last hour, but what about the previous 10, 12, 24 hours, like, you know, of the kind of pain and heartache that they're going through, like, in the birthing process, like, you know, but it's fine, you're there for the last hour. I just don't think that, there's no joined up thinking here, Joe.
Okay. Well, Finny, I'm sure it will go well in 2 weeks' time. Kind regards to you and Karina. By the way, you mentioned on your own, what are Codaline doing during the lockdown?
Not a whole lot, Joe. Not a whole lot.
And how are you managing?
It's a tough time. A good friend of mine, Shane Dunn, who works with MCD and is the promoter for Independence Festival down in Cork, has been put together a group called Epic Working Group, basically trying to like campaign for the live entertainment sector, like the privatized entertainment sector, because I know there's people talk about grants and stuff like that for the entertainment industry, but that's for like theaters and stuff like that. That's not for commercial entities, like, you know. So we're just kind of being completely forgot by the wayside. So yeah, it's a worrying time, but like obviously I don't want to get back and gig unless people feel 100% safe and confident in doing it, like, you know. So but I also think that the government need to step up and do more than a 6 million euro grant, like when they're literally paying out millions and millions to pubs.
Yeah, and we also heard yesterday from, you're hitting the nail on, or you're hitting the nerve with me, because we had a woman on yesterday who got her carer's allowance withdrawn in the middle of COVID, and on the one hand, the government were saying we want to give the COVID payment to as many people as possible, but this woman was in a desperate situation. But anyway, Finny, I hope it goes well. Like, I presume, I know you lined up for gigs and concerts over the summer, but I presume Codaline will stay together.
No, 100%, Joe. It's something that we've been doing and wanted to do since we were kids, like, you know. So
what was the album called? One Day at a Time, is it?
Yeah.
Take it one day at a time, Vinny, would you?
Exactly.
Kind regards to Crean and all the other lads in the band as well. That's Vinny May from Codaline. Big day ahead of Vinny and Crean in 2 weeks from today. PG. Grania, good afternoon.
Hi, Joe. Joe, I was just listening to your conversation, and I suppose I think that new mums or prospective new mums are probably going to get quite nervous. I had a baby there in June in Hollis Street. It was a very difficult pregnancy. I lost a twin at 12 weeks. And I had hyperemesis the whole way through. So that's nausea, vomiting 24 hours a day. So I was in Hollis Street a lot during the pregnancy. Mm-hmm. And I had previous miscarriages, and my last daughter is 8 years old, so it's quite a jump, and it's a very nerve-wracking situation. But I just want, and I would have loved to, I just think people have to understand that, you know, you'd say the pregnancy isn't an illness, but there are women in there who, like myself at that time, would have had a compromised immune system, and we had waited so long for our baby boy, and especially as we'd lost the other twin, that I would have been prepared to not have my partner there if it meant that my baby was going to be delivered safely, because we waited so long for him. Okay. And I suppose that's the other side of the argument. And the nurses in there are amazing. And for new mum, for the prospective new mums, you can do it and you will get through it. And like I just wanted to offer some reassurance and some hope to people.
That comes across very strongly. But also, I think what people are saying, is there a way around this that it doesn't have to be an either-or situation? And maybe can there be, given that there's relaxing of restrictions and nuancing of restrictions in other areas, could there be clearer and more nuanced instructions? But anyway, Grania, thanks again. And I know you gave birth in June, and unfortunately you had lost the other twin at 12 weeks, but hopefully good health to you and your family. That's Grania. We've been talking about this from the start, and we will be talking about it if the producer decides to the end, because that's all we're getting calls on, primarily from women like Grania and Emer and Kate and Sharon. 51551 Washington.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
And joe@rt.ie. David, good afternoon.
Hi, Joe, how are you doing?
God, your wife had a miscarriage in June and during the lockdown.
Yeah, unfortunate to say. Yeah. So we were doing several treatments over the years, and I suppose it was a joint process, the two of us. And then came to COVID. We were looking to do IVF, which wasn't something that I would have ever expected that we would ever get to that stage. I suppose that to do IVF, we've read about it, we watched shows on RT, etc. But to face that was it in itself very stressful. And then along came COVID, so it was suspended at one stage, and then came to our journey. And we'll say it was stressful enough to have to approach it together again, but to get egg retrieval, etc., was her mainly on her own. I obviously was there as much as I could at home or driving her to there. We got good news in one sense. We only got two eggs, but two eggs got two embryos. Implementation was done. That was great news. We got called here together. Really, really good news that everything was good. We got all blood tests. Everything was perfect. And then we looked towards the first week scan. The first scan was something that we knew enough about it, but that we had to see a heartbeat, etc. She was a bit more optimistic. I was a little bit more kind of, okay, I want to manage my expectations, I suppose, is the way I can look at it. I kept myself a little bit more silent on it, but I drove her to the clinic, and it was very stressful. It happened to leave her off to walk into a clinic to get, we were saying, good news, or to see if they had to wait a bit longer to see what type of timeline we'll call it. But I sat in the car. I did a thing. Well, I don't know if a lot of people do this, but I'm sure there's a few men that will do this. They will see it and they'll start reading. So I was on Google to find out about the scan and complications, etc. As pessimistic as some guys can be, and just as I came across a few things, I got a phone call, and it was one of the nurses, and he said, "Hi, David. This is." Such and such, and confirmed the name, confirmed the date, etc., and then said, "Look, it's unfortunately it's bad news." Now I just stopped, and they said, "Katrine, if she needs you in here with you."
Yeah.
I panicked. I went into pure shock. Now I wasn't supposed to go in at that particular time, but she was screaming for me. So I suppose I was called in. I went in, and it was a horrific situation. I felt, and she felt, that we should have been in there together from the first minute, I suppose, to be able to sit in with each other and comfort each other and to get that news. I look at it as the news was had to be given in that kind of sense.
And I just have that image of you running into the hospital. Did you know where to go? Did you know what room your wife was in?
It was like the first time I walked into that place, I have to say. I just looked around. It looked like, for me, it felt like an emergency. I think for them, it's the same, it's the same kind of setup as usual. They have a lot to deal with, I suppose, from their perspective in hindsight when I look back. But I didn't know which room to walk into. I didn't know where to go particularly yet. But I was called in. It was sensibly brought to me. It was kind of, the nurse was very comforting to me. And I just had to kind of face the music. There was nothing else I could think but to kind of squeeze her, and that's all I could do. It was something we couldn't ever imagine that would have happened. But at that as well, it goes straight into the black and white of I suppose the science behind it is that if it's they have to do other checks as well to confirm everything, that would have been had to be done in the hospital. So the next point, I suppose, would have been we had to book an appointment in and get another scan, which is just so heartbreaking to be bringing her in, leaving her off to places where women are pregnant, and she still has to confirm if this is, we'll say fully confirmed. If you want to say that, so we did that three times. I could say it's something that I don't know if I would have handled any different. Like, I didn't know what to say to her when I left her off. There's no good luck. There's no, you know, phone me if anything happens. It's just you kind of leave them in to do what they need to do and come back and go for a coffee, go for a bit of lunch. But it's just the unknown as well, because all I wanted to do was just to kind of hold her, to bring her in and just kind of just be there, because the whole Tertulli journey was the two of us. As much as someone mentioned there before in one of the previous interviews, was that in the men are kind of left out in one side as well. We kind of keep quiet. It's just something we do. That's fine, because there's a lot we don't know and there's a lot of questions we don't ask. But I had much more questions this time, and I just felt there was no, I couldn't be there for that. So so the finish of our next IVF in the next couple of weeks. So we are hopeful again, that journey is just it's not something that we look forward to be back into a clinic or whatever may be after this. Yeah.
And you mentioned you had to go back. Was it two further occasions, David? Were you allowed in on those occasions?
No, not to the hospital, no.
Okay.
It was so the hospital would be, so the way town is as well, you would drop her off outside leave her off in to go herself. And it's just a horrible journey to see it like that. Like the journey in itself, to get to where we were, was so... It was one of the biggest challenges, definitely, I've ever faced, and I'm sure, without a doubt, from her point of view, she's a very strong woman. She's able to deal with quite a lot of different struggles and challenges in her life. But this was something that you just couldn't read any. We were at a stage where we were reading books on babies, etc. So when you get into that, and then something switches, and with the COVID thing as well. Now, like I'm looking. Sometimes I felt like just like a spectator trying to see and understand the situation of. I can understand a certain amount of things that hospitals have to do and a certain kind of regulations, etc. But I think just to mention, I think everyone mentions the mental health issues, but I think for something like this, I think the mental health issues are as important as everything else.
Okay, well, sorry you went through that great difficulty. And as you say, hopefully things will be different the next time. I mean, in every sense of the word, David, and your wife, and kind regards and best wishes. That was David. Back after this, Joe at rt.ie.
Joe Duffy.
Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815.
And Joe at rt.ie. Sinead, good afternoon. Sinead Hingston in Dublin.
Hi, Joe. How are you?
Well, two miscarriages during the lockdown.
Yeah, so I've had two back-to-back, unfortunately. Yeah. One in May and one just 2 weeks ago was the last one. Oh, it was actually the second one was an ectopic pregnancy. So.
Okay. And what was your experience? And your family's experience, your husband's experience as well?
Well, yeah, we found out we were pregnant at the beginning of May, and I have two perfectly healthy children at home, thank God.
Right, yeah.
Very breezy pregnancies with them. So never in a million years thought that anything would go wrong. But sadly, it started to at kind of 5.5 weeks. Started bleeding at home, so I had to ring Holles Street. And went in by myself, drove myself in. You know, just soul-destroying stuff. So to be told, they couldn't really, it was very early on, so they didn't really know what was going on. So the rest of that week was kind of in and out myself with getting blood taken, having scans. And then the following week, they confirmed that I was having a miscarriage, that the baby had no heartbeat. So.
And was your husband allowed?
No. Okay. No, I was on my own for all of them. The only time he drove me in was when I had the D&C procedure then, 2 weeks after that. So all the scans and the bloods, all of that was me driving myself into Holles Street. And the day that I found out, actually, that there was no heartbeat, I got as far as the little prayer room in Holles Street and just collapsed in a heap. And just, it's very difficult. It's a time when, you know, you shouldn't have to be strong, but you're kind of forced to be because you're alone. So And you can't fault the staff. I mean, they almost have an extra job to do with all of the the emotions and everything that they have to deal with because the partners aren't there to support. And the staff have just been incredible. But it's just, it's very wrong. So we then found out, not long after, that I was pregnant again, which was incredible. We were thrilled. Didn't think it would happen so quickly. And everything was going beautifully. Got past the whole 5.5 week mark and was very excited and started to kind of relax and decided to go for a private scan just to make sure that everything was okay. And I'd actually emailed ahead and I said, look, you know, would there be any chance that my husband could come in with me? Mm. I've just suffered a loss very recently and I'm just a bit nervous and would there be any way? And they just said, unfortunately not, that they, you know, the directors weren't willing to kind of ease off on any of the restrictions and procedures they had in place just yet. And this was 3 weeks ago.
Nice.
So I went in very positive and hopeful, but unfortunately they couldn't actually find the pregnancy this time. So it had just implanted in one of my tubes instead of where it should have been.
Yeah.
So when I left then, obviously my husband was waiting outside the door and I walked as far as the stairwell and just collapsed into a bit of a mess. I was absolutely devastated. So again, it was back into Holles Street that week for more scans and more bloods, and all by myself sitting in waiting room B in Holles Street. And then they decided the following, or that Friday, that they were going to keep me in because they were a bit concerned that if it was ectopic that it might rupture. And yeah, I was in then for 3 days before they decided to operate them. So that was just a couple of weeks ago.
And you make the point, Sinead, myself and my husband were able to go out to a restaurant last week.
So yeah, last Thursday we went out for a bite to eat for lunch just to get out of the house. Yeah. And, you know, we walked in and we sat down and obviously you've got no mask on because you're eating your lunch. We were there for maybe 45 minutes, 50 minutes. And I just remember just saying to him, like, it's so wrong that we can sit here and enjoy this yummy lunch. And yet, I had to be on my own for all of those scans and appointments. Like, it's just, I feel like the priorities just maybe need to shift a little.
Okay, well, we have a statement, Sinead. It's not in relation to your case or any individual case, but it's not a case. Your story, your life experience.
Oh, I know.
Your life experience. A spokesperson from the National Maternity Hospital, Holles Street, in applying visitor restrictions, this hospital and every other hospital works to balance the well-being of our patients with their safety and that of the staff. Currently, partners are allowed to attend labour and birth and can also visit inpatients for two-hour periods. In some circumstances, well, that, anyway, but let people judge. We understand the stories that there are restrictions about how long you can attend labour and birth. You're brought in for the active labour. But anyway, in some circumstances, they may be able to attend inpatient appointments and scans. There is unrestricted visiting to the neonatal intensive care unit for parents whose babies are being cared for there. The pandemic poses particular challenges in hospitals as we seek to retain the largest staff complement possible at a time when staff will inevitably become ill or be required to self-isolate from time to time. This is why we must unfortunately impose these restrictions to ensure we have specialist staff to treat our patients and to ensure the safety of patients themselves. We are constantly reviewing guidance available and watching domestic and international developments as we adapt to the unique challenge of running safe maternity services during a pandemic of this magnitude. But rising numbers of cases in the city, i.e. Dublin, we must be particularly vigilant. So that's the current situation anyway, Sinead. Sinead, thanks indeed. And kind,
no problem.
Kind regards for the future. 51551, my friend.
Joe Duffy.
Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815.
Niamh, good afternoon. Your point, please, as we come to the end of the programme and I'm going to disappoint so many people who are trying to get on. What happened, Niamh?
We had our baby in July and she was perfectly fine, so we thought. Mm-hmm. But she had some feeding issues and wasn't hitting her weight goals. So
okay.
Long story short, we had to go to Temple Street when she was 2 weeks old.
Right.
And you can imagine that's pretty distressing when you're a first-time mum. And the next thing, I find out my husband can't be with me. So we're there for 2 nights with a brand-new baby in an isolation ward, completely alone, with no support from my family or husband, and trying to establish breastfeeding and all of that with an underweight baby. And we had to basically do shifts, and where I would go sleep in the car. And I noticed there was loads of other parents asleep in the car at like 3 in the morning outside Temple Street Hospital. And I was just like, God, that's really horrific. And then we ended up in Temple Street again when she was 5 weeks, because she was quite unwell, but she's fine now, thank God. But we were there for 4 nights. This was only last weekend. Mm-hmm. And again, trying to do shifts with my husband to try and get a bit of a break, you know, sleeping in the car, making a bed in the car. God. Trying to just get some rest and trying to feed her and trying to get her weight up, with no support of the brand new baby. So I just feel that, like, new parents and new mothers really need that support, like, we aren't getting during this pandemic. So it's just been really a very testing time for everybody. But
I'm sure because I asked you some questions. And the labour itself, Niamh, where's your husband allowed?
He was, but that was because I had consultant care. So basically, I was being brought in for a pre-labour ward, and okay. I was helped to get up to the delivery suite very, very quickly, probably quicker than I should have been. So I was blessed there, and he was with me. But then he was gone, literally an hour after she was born. And again, then he just got to visit for the hour, 2 hours, and it was like having a guest come in. You know, he didn't change a nappy. There was nothing to do. I was exhausted. You know... It was like having a stranger visit you. It wasn't like having your husband come in and help you throughout.
And I'm also, it was Kate, I noted it down when she said it earlier in the programme, about an hour ago, that she was allowed for some of her scans, because she went private, she was allowed to bring her husband in with her.
No, I wasn't. No, we didn't have, after 20 weeks, on the 20-week scan, everything got locked down for us. Yeah. So that was our last scan together, and then my husband wasn't allowed in at all right up until I was giving birth.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm glad your baby is well, and you are too, Niamh, and stay well, PG. Thanks indeed, Niamh. Thanks for all the callers. Apology to that long list I see in front of me of that hopefully tomorrow we will get to them. Jamie Dye was on sound, BCO was Doc Martin, Lisa Marie Berry was the producer, and Rebecca Meehan is the series producer. Ray Darcy's next.